welcome to the 8th episode of the all-new GAK Guitar Shop Podcast. I am your host, Joe Brandon, who is with me today.
Hello, folks. I'm Luke, and I'm one of the guitar buyers.
Hello, I'm Joss, and I run the YouTube.
Wonderful. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you both doing?
Fantastic. Bit sleepy.
A bit sleepy?
Yeah.
Oh, you were doing lots of deadlifts this morning.
Yes. Got up early.
This morning, Luke has eaten 5 cookies.
Five
cookies. After all those deadlifts.
Which, yeah, doesn't that undo all the deadlift work that you've done?
No. But you don't understand powerlifting.
No,
I should explain here. One of our reps brought in some bags of very large, tasty cookies.
You didn't just sort of bring in yourself.
And I have no self-control.
Ah, right. Wonderful. So
one of these days I will learn this.
Excellent. So so we've had a week off from the podcast. It was 2 weeks ago that we did our last podcast. I'm afraid we couldn't do last week because I was
feeling a bit peaky.
Well, I was in the studio. I was knackered. I was like working some of the days, but I was also recording in the studio all week, so I wasn't very with it and I wasn't here enough. But yes, we are back now. How have you guys both been in the time that we've been away? Joss Allen, how have you been?
Yeah, not bad, thank you.
Not bad, thank you. What have you been what have you been up to? Have you been playing anything cool and interesting?
No, just well, I mean, not myself, but
that sounds enthusiastic.
Yeah, there's been plenty of bits and pieces in video wise and photo wise that's been really nice.
Like?
PRS again. I mean, we're getting a lot of PRS guitars in, I would assume, just for the reason of having so much new stock coming through the store.
Just buying loads so you can do videos of them.
Yeah, exactly. there were some nice PRS guitars that came through. What else did I do? I done a couple of pedals, which was pretty cool. Some nice pedal stuff.
What were the pedals?
The Aria Distortion by Pigtronix. A pedal that I think has been out for a long time now, but it's I haven't really seen too many demos online, so I tried to give it an in-depth sort of look at the pedal. So it's like a 10-minute video on the whole gain structure of the pedal from being low to high, and all that sort of stuff. And then I used the 51 Custom Shop, not 51. It's the 30th anniversary model.
Yeah,
I think
30th anniversary.
Yeah,
of Relics.
Yeah. And I used the Polysaturator for the overdrive on that.
Yeah.
And pedals work really, really well in front of the DV Mark because it's such a clinical clean.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What made you do Pigtronix? What made you choose Pigtronix to do?
To be honest, I was searching around the pedal platform for some more boutique-y pedals to do. And because obviously we have a store, all the pedals go down there.
Yeah.
So there's never any chance of me to off the cuff go and grab a cool boutique pedal because they're all down the warehouse because we don't get, you know, a Leviathan amount of these boutique pedals.
Yeah.
So I went on a search and I came across the Pigtronix stuff and I was like, oh, crap, I've completely forgot about that stuff.
It wasn't, like, inspired. There weren't any players that had been using them.
I mean, I watched this video from, like, 3 years ago at NAMM where Joe Bonamassa's playing the Polysaturator or something.
Really? He's the last person I'd expect to play the Polysaturator.
He's on the stand checking it out. Like, he's not playing it to play it, but at the end he does go like, do you take cards? I would assume that he bought it.
He is quite a big collector.
I bet he has a lot of stuff. You name it and I reckon he'll have it.
There are a few pictures floating around of him like in his amp room and it's just drool worthy.
He's got some seriously sought after Fender stuff, hasn't he, amp wise. He's even got those really cool Gibson amps as well.
Gibson made some really interesting old amps back in the day, back before sort of capacitor coupling and things, or transformer coupled stages and weird interesting things.
Yeah. That one place we saw had that 63. Remember that 112 combo?
Yeah, amazing.
Really cool.
We actually got a second hand Gibson amp come through the shop.
It was a really small one.
Yeah,
small one?
Yeah, a really small one.
Yeah, it was like a Gibson one, but it was a tiny little one knob.
Like
Gibson
leather
amp.
Covered with like a gold grill.
Yeah,
that was when they bought Trace Elliot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that would have originally under Trace Elliot would have been called the Vela set.
Right, I see. I didn't see a name on it as such. It basically had one knob and said Gibson on it and it was made of leather.
Yeah.
They were all built over here. As far as I'm aware. And then at one point, I think Gibson shipped the manufacturing over to the States.
Oh, mental. It's a shame that they stopped. I thought they were really... It was kind of a really good direction for Gibson, that sort of thing.
It's weird because, I mean, obviously back in the day before there was this sort of proliferation of amp builders, Gibson made amps, like back in like the 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
And they were always sort of quite interesting designs because it was before sort of modern amps had been kind of standardised,
right,
for want of a better description. And then they sort of stopped making them for a long while and then sort of went back into it when they bought Trace.
Right.
But I don't think it did very well for them because the Trace guitar line never really sold that well.
Mm.
And like they did the Bonneville and the Trident and all that stuff. And I had a Trident for a while. It had so many features on it. I could never quite get a good tone out of it.
Really?
There's one company that really feels strongly about the Gibson amps. You know the company Evil Robot?
Yeah.
They're really, really cool sounding amps. The guitar player Phil X plays those. Check them out because they're meant to be exact representations of the Gibson amplifiers, but with an extra gain stage.
Okay.
So you can, and they do them, and so you can really
That's
sort of push it.
Like all the sort of Victoria built, like Fender reissues and all that sort
of
thing.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
I never realised that was kind of the link.
Yeah, check it out. They sound cool.
Josh, didn't you coming back around to sort of the pedal demos that you did, didn't you do a Wampler pedal recently as well?
Oh, I've done my favourite one, yeah, the Tom Quayle Dual Fusion.
How was that?
Yeah, it's my favourite overdrive pedal.
How
definitely.
Come?
It's just... I'm a huge sort of fusion jazz lover, and Tom Quayle is definitely by far probably my favourite out there at the moment in terms of tonal variance in the way he sounds when he plays that sort of style of music.
Right.
And it's just the whole capability of being able to stack the drives on top of each other in different ways. Because it has the two inputs on each side.
Yeah, stacking drive is really nice. It's good when you get two drives that stack well together.
Yeah, because it's a Paisley with more mid-range.
Right.
And it's an Ecstasy that hasn't been changed.
A Euphoria, sorry, that hasn't been changed. I didn't realise.
Yeah, so being able to... They just really work together. Like Steve Burrows, he had those two pedals and was using them two together anyway.
Right.
And then Wampler bought out
so
the
then
Dual
Tom
Fusion.
Quayle nicked the idea.
Yeah, yeah. He saw Steve play and was like, oh man, that's tone right there.
Oh man, he's nailed it.
Yeah. So I'm gonna
I've got to get me
yeah,
some
I've
of that.
Be able to pedal. And him playing it through sort of digital preamplification like
the DV Mark.
The DV Mark on the clean channel just sounds outrageous. It's a really, really nice tone. He has a couple of other boutique just clean amps, but he's with Laney now.
Ah, interesting.
You see, he's using the Lionheart series stuff only on clean.
Which I don't know. I've only really played the Lionheart 5s, which understandably have no clean headroom.
No,
I don't know. The biggest stuff.
Well, when we went up to Birmingham and I got to try the 25 before it was released, the small head one.
Yeah,
it's unbelievably cool.
Okay.
The drive is a lot. I would assume just because of the lower wattage, the drive really does sound more drivey, like as if there's more gain there. There's more gain there, but in almost like a jazz fusion type of way, like the mid-range and the bottom end is really smooth.
Right, okay.
And there's no fuzziness to the top end whatsoever.
Interesting.
So I think that might be because of the wattage change and they've had to change, but they've also got a switch on the back to bring it down even more. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But that, when I was playing the RC720 through it,
uh-huh.
Do you remember?
Yeah.
It sounded just incredible. The problem with going up to Birmingham, right, and playing these amps and stuff when we go before all the sort of other companies get there, is that when you play the guitar...
Birmingham is the headstock factory where Liney and Ibanez are.
Yeah, Liney.
Liney.
And,
Liney and Ibanez.
Liney and Ibanez. The problem with going up
there... I think we've just invented two new shonky guitar brands.
Coming
straight
out of China.
I see some more lawsuit era coming.
Yeah, yeah. The problem with going up there is that sitting down and playing the guitar is really, really weird because there's only the players there and then there's only the headstock and like the Ibanez and Lenny reps up there. As soon as you start playing, it goes dead quiet and they all stop and watch you.
Really?
So it's really weird. Like,
but you love it.
Yeah. I do. I absolutely adore it because I get to shred out and like have fun and stuff.
Look at my sweet licks, guys.
Yeah, exactly. And I just remember Adam coming over to... Oh, who's the Mr. Laney? Was James coming over to... No, James came over to Adam and was like, every time just comes up and starts playing, it goes dead quiet in here. And I was like, I don't know whether that's a compliment or you're just saying that I'm that bad or, that or, no or, one or, wants or, to say yeah, anything.
If you're trying to suggest you've just farted at
dinner exactly, party. Yeah, that right. sort of situation, yeah.
Right. Nice.
You've actually done, well, I mean, this is kind of, I guess, the first time we've really started doing pedal demos again for a long yeah. time. It's been sort of guitar demos only yeah. for a while. It's cool that we're sort of, that you're like expanding into doing other demos and stuff, but I mean Joss does sort of think of things to demo on a day-to-day basis, so podcast listeners, if there's ever anything that you want Joss to sort of try out or demo, you can just you know, bung us a message on the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group, and Joss will bung together a video in relatively quick time as well. So yeah, if there's anything you ever want to see, if you think about buying and you want to see it demoed, then yeah, give Joss a shout.
Try and keep it within the reins of enjoyable acquisition though. Like when I'm playing it, I wouldn't like someone to go grab that Squire Telecaster on a Boss Metal Zone and demo that for me.
That'd make a sweet demo.
Boss Metal Zone's a feature, mate.
Yeah. There used to be a band called Flyblown, sort of playing like D-beat crust.
Right.
And the guitarist ran two metal zones with everything on 10.
Amazing. Mm-hmm.
Into,
of course.
Like, I think maybe 3 or 4 Marshall full stacks.
Jesus.
Like probably the loudest band I've ever seen. Saw them play the Forum up in Tunbridge Wells.
Right.
Not a big venue. Very loud.
Yeah. I imagine it was.
I think he lost most of his hearing in one of his ears eventually.
So Luke Taft, what about you? How have you been this week?
I've been very well.
What have you been playing?
I've been enjoying the same PRSs as Mr. Joss.
Yeah.
The Flame Naples.
I said that on the demo and I had to stop. I was like, Flame Naples.
These are from Naples. The Flame Maple Neck Limiteds are incredible.
Right. And what are they? Explain
there's a custom 22 and a custom 24/30th that are basically 10 tops. So when they grade the wood in the factory, 10 top is the best.
Right.
And then they use sort of other bits for everything else. Really nice bits on top. And then flame maple necks instead of the normal mahogany.
Uh-huh.
And stained.
Mm.
So the back of the neck matches the front of the guitar with a lovely sort of nice piece of maple in it.
Runs up the back of the headstock as well.
Yeah. Just it's like over like the little, where you see all the contours from the neck going into the headstock,
uh-huh.
they just look outstanding.
It's hard to explain how good they do look.
Yeah, just look at the pictures on the website. Just Google, just GAC search PRS Flame Maple, and they'll come up, and yeah. they are just incredible guitars. Normally, PRS only let you spec up stained and flamed maple necks on like private stocks that are, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 plus.
Right.
Or however much private stocks go up to these days.
I mean, when I went to a different shop, I saw one going for like £13,000.
Yeah, the pricing on them is crazy. So it's kind of, they've done a limited run for a few pieces for Europe. I think maybe 20, 25 guitars of a 22 and 20, 25
wow, is that,
guitars,
ooh, 24. That is a super limited run.
Yeah.
I think it was something that Jez, the sales manager for the UK and Europe, just specced up. He was like, I want to do these. And they sort of let him.
Fine.
The private stock stuff is outrageous sometimes, isn't it? Like they use gold leaf and they use silver, real silver inlays and stuff like that.
That's bonkers. How does private stock work then? Is that like a custom shop?
Yeah, it's like
so
their
customers
custom
can
shop.
Place yeah. orders for private stock.
Every private stock is checked out, played, and signed by Paul himself as well at the end of it.
That's pretty awesome.
Which is pretty nice because, I mean, still hundreds of private stock probably go out all the time, right?
I don't know how many they shift, like, because they're so expensive. They're, I mean, so you sort of see them, some places clearly do a few.
I know exactly what place you're talking about, but I mean, like, that is like when, you know, only those, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Where are all your other guitars? Like, how, but to be honest, places like that only have to sell one. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know how do people go about ordering private stock things? Is it
I don't know that.
Do we work on the same basis as custom shop? Similar.
It's
Fender custom shop.
Yeah, similar. You can spec it up and then build it and wait, or there are sort of pieces coming in
right
that have been sort of built already.
I mean, they're so outrageous that even if you, I guess the only thing that you'd maybe want to spec out with a custom build, maybe like custom 22, 24, do you know what I mean? Because, or a single cut, because most of the ones that come into stores that I've seen are so beautiful or so outrageous that you're kind of like, I'd be happy to take one of these ones. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They are absolutely mental. But if that's your bag and that's what you're looking for, exactly, they do it better than anyone. Yeah. So.
It's definitely a wall mount guitar. It's not a play.
Really?
Yeah. Well, that's sort of PRS through and through, isn't it? Yeah. So the last time we were podcasting, fellas, we were talking about like our top players, our three most influential players, and we were talking about their setups and what made them unique and what why those setups influenced us. But we only got sort of round two each, so I figured, well, I said last time we were on this podcast that we'd hear your last two, and we do have, you know, some other bits to talk about on this podcast. It has been summer NAMM since we've last podcast together, so we're going to talk about some cool bits from that, and maybe we'll talk a bit about some other stuff too and take questions. But I thought it would be cool for us to hear the other one that was missing from that list.
The third one.
Yeah, yeah. Luke Taff, why don't you start us off?
My third one is Dave Knudsen from Minus the Bear, a man whose pedalboard is ridiculous.
Right.
And all of which is used. You know, sometimes you see players with massive pedalboards and you're sort of wondering what's... Because it all just sounds like normal guitar that's nice.
At the edge.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Like, his rig is ridiculous. Have you seen, like, the gear run through with his tech?
Yeah.
It's just, like, this massive rack.
Yeah, it's like ridiculous, because he actually has his guitar tech there with him to hand him guitars when he changes over, even though he's standing approximately 3 yards from the rack of guitars. I always thought that was the most arrogant thing I've ever seen.
It is, but in the video I've seen, he still has a way of coming across as a really nice fella.
Oh, right. That's
cool. I thought it was like, oh, this is pretty rock star. But he seems... I just want to go for a pint with him. It all comes across really well. Not at all like Bono.
It was when he started running a sort of large flake glitter silver acoustic through his pedal board that I think I stopped watching.
That's fine. Just if you can, do it. But yeah, Dave Knudsen, big pedal board. He has four Line 6 DL4s.
Right.
Obviously.
Right. Four?
Four.
Right.
The Singer uses...
Maybe two, but like four?
Four. One for delays. Not enough. One as a backup and two for looping.
I thought you said he uses them all.
He does.
If it's a one for
the backup, because when they're playing longer sets in hotter clubs, at least one of them will crap out.
Oh, of course.
Like, apparently, if you're using four, one of them will crap out with the heat.
Amazing.
So he has to. But yeah, he for anyone that's not familiar with Minus the Bear, he does a lot of sort of glitchy sampling. So with the DR4s, you can play in a loop, and unlike any other loop station, you can trigger a one shot of it and it will start from the start of the loop every time you hit it. So he sort of plays in different chords to different DL4s and then plays chords along as an accompaniment to him playing over the top.
Right, I
see. Which is interesting. And then plays in lead lines and then either slows it down to half speed or doubles it up to give it sort of an octave up effect, and then triggers those as one shots. So like you can play in like sort of like a little phrase and then keep triggering the first note and then it will stutter and then replay the rest of the phrase.
Amazing.
If you look up, if anyone wants to see this in action, just look up Line 6 DL4 Knights, spelt with a K, as in sort of knights and horses and of the realm.
Round table.
Or just, Minus the Bear Knights. That's a good example of him using DL4s.
The DL4 is such a great delay pedal. It's not... I don't want to use the word underrated, because it's not. I think everyone is aware of how good it is, but it's definitely stood the test of time.
More so than a lot of other...
Things. Even with the introduction of Strymon and now an even newer delay pedal, which we'll talk about later on the podcast. But, with everything that's come out...
Yeah.
Everything that came out when the DL4 was around... Is obsolete now.
Yeah, including finally the Pod 2.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was going to stick around forever. But that's gone.
Because what were the other things that Line 6 reached? They had the DL4, which was the green delay one.
Yeah,
the yellow modulation one.
Yellow was drive.
Oh, was it drive? Mm. Yeah, purple was modulation.
No, green.
Oh, God.
No, green is delay.
Green is delay. Purple is green.
Yeah, purple is modulation.
Green is delay, although that should obviously have probably been overdrive. Then the FM4, which was the filter modeler,
right?
Drive modeler, which was the DM4, and then there was one more. What was the other one? An MM4?
No, I'm not sure.
I don't know. But yeah, all the others have gone. The DL4 is still there. I think possibly because it is so unique in terms of the looping.
Yeah.
A lot of players kind of doing the Dave Knudsen style looping thing.
Yeah, it's weird that no one's really... That's not become a standard thing.
No, like, I think it's...
I feel that the DL4 could have been put out of business if people had adapted that.
Yeah, especially with all the sort of better sounding delays that have
come exactly.
out. I mean, maybe a lot of some other delays aren't as comprehensive.
No, I mean,
in terms of models,
being able to just click a button to switch between reverse and
yeah.
normal direction on the DL4. Like, if you take a lot of other delays and loopers will have that feature, but they'll have it on like a small button that you've got to press to select that setting.
Yeah.
So you are either in reverse or you're doing normal delay, because you wouldn't want to do both. But of course, actually, that's really desirable to be able to layer stuff up and then
switch
the layers round so one's reversed and the other's not, I think is great.
It's nice being able to play things in at half speed and then put them back to normal speed.
Yeah, stuff like that. But I think the thing with the DL4, despite it being as versatile as it is, it's so widely used that when you use a DL4 now, it's actually... The guitarist in my band doesn't use one because when he got one, he couldn't not sound like other people.
Yeah, they do sound very DL4.
Yeah.
Like, it is obvious if someone's using a DL4. It's a shame they haven't quite reached that tipping point of, like, the whammy, where everyone knows what they sound like. So many people use them that no one really minds.
Yeah, I guess so. Although, I don't know, there are a few players that have kind of become whammy synonymous, like...
Tom Morello,
yeah.
Fry, Untouching Tongues and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking more bands like Can So I Watch You From Afar?
Yeah.
Where they've clearly just got it turned on all the time.
Yes, they do. They are a big... I mean, anything in that sort of, like, math area is... Everyone has one of those. Just like everyone has Eventide...
like the space.
On their pedal board as well. That sort of glitchy thing.
Where you can sort of almost hear it sampling.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sort of... I enjoy that, but I find it... It sort of gets to me after a little while.
Well, I think the Eventide Space is a great other example of a pedal that sounds really good, but now there are bands that have used it, can't use it and not sound like it. Like, I think Mutiny on the Bounty, as well as And So I Watch You From Afar, are two bands that really suffer from Eventide Space syndrome.
You sort of do wonder a little bit, because if they've got like a space and then the delay, the sort of one of the other Eventides, and then a few other digital pedals, you sort of think about the amount of A to D and D to A conversion that's going on. At some point, something's going to sound a bit funky.
Yeah, I guess so, but...
Maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
I have no idea.
Although you'd hope that the conversions were good enough.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any difference.
So this I've forgotten his name.
Dave Knudsen. Although I've heard people pronounce his name Knudsen.
Right.
It's spelt with a K and he's American, so it wouldn't surprise me if they do that.
I see.
But yeah, that's kind of half of his pedal board. The rest of it, Digitech Whammy for pitch shifting stuff.
Right.
Electro-Harmonics Hog is used very creatively.
Right.
In terms of they have the Hog has like a portamento, which isn't a term often associated with guitar.
Right.
But you
it's
sort
more
of
synth, right?
It's like organ
stuff,
proper old school, like sort of gradually changing between notes. So you play in a chord or a note, the Hog holds it, you play in another chord, and then it won't change until you sweep the pedal.
Right.
And it sort of gradually sweeps into the next chord, so you can do all these sort of weird sort of blends between chords.
No, that's weird.
It's like having like an old Boss like slow gear going both out and in.
Yeah.
On an expression pedal.
Right.
Which is interesting. But on top of that, as well as doing all that, it also adds in all the octaves of an organ. So you've got the fifth and the octave. Well, you've got the octave and then the octave plus a fifth.
Right.
And then two octaves. And you can blend in all these different pitch shifts to create these massive chords.
Amazing.
Yeah, and they use a lot of that on the Planet of Ice album.
It's a bit underrated, the Hog, isn't it? You don't see it. It doesn't crop up on many boards.
I think it's possibly because it's massive.
It is ridiculously sized.
I think it's why a controller for it as well, can't you?
Yeah, like you need the controller to use it properly, realistically.
Yeah. Electro Harmonix did themselves in with the Pog in that sense as well, when they have the Pog 2 and then released the Micro Pog, and everyone was just like, oh, I'll just get the Micro Pog.
And then they released the Nano Pog.
Yeah. Oh, have they?
Yeah.
There's a Nano Pog.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
There'll be a Pico Pog soon, and then Femto and Atto.
Right, amazing.
Just keep getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah. I'm excited about that.
So yeah, that's the pedal that's there. Although on a couple of the more recent tours, due to size, he took that off and was using Line 6 M5 on the filter settings,
right,
just to kind of approximate the Hog for live, which I found quite an interesting move, because as we all know, the M5 is a really versatile pedal that just does loads of stuff.
Yeah.
And apparently it's versatile enough for a lot of things. You can emulate a massive organ pedal.
Yeah, that's nuts. I have an M5, which I've retired from my board, but I was sort of using it to look for the weirdest stuff that I could get it to do. I never found anything like that, because I've thought a lot about buying like a B9 or a C9, the Electro Harmonix organ effect generator pedals, and I could never get anything. Oh, I'm going to have to go back to my M5 now and see if I can save myself £150.
Anything when the screen is purple.
Right.
That's the rule.
Right.
It's the filter bank. That's where the fun is.
Right. I will see.
Beyond that, he has like a box of rock, like the ZVEX, which is sort of used for like the core drive sound, and various different incarnations of Tube Screamer or Tube Screamer alike drives.
Right.
A CS3, which is used for lowering the output when he's recording loops into the DL4s in between songs.
That's an interesting use of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just what he had that sort of knocked the level down a bit.
Right.
A Barber tone press as the main compressor.
Amazing.
Mm. Everyone needs
great compressor.
Yeah, I love mine. It's very good. And there is more. There are more pedals on this board. A Boss RC3 these days, which has some pre-recorded loops.
Right.
There's so some stuff.
Yeah, it's great, the RC3. I mean, you can SD in with the RC3.
Yeah, exactly.
Which just makes it so incredibly versatile.
You can just keep all your backups.
Yeah.
And then
it's just a double stop finish. It's really annoying on those single pedal loopers.
Yeah,
you can buy that separate.
Plug in the FS6 or an FS7.
Yeah, these days. Exactly. But then it's taking up a ton of room for.
You might as well just buy an RC30.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, he just uses it to store some loops that are too hard for him to play in live.
Right.
Of course, there are some sort of synth loops and things as well.
Right.
And then beyond that, I think that might be the pedals covered.
Yeah.
In terms of guitars, he basically plays an old gold top PRS McCarty for most things.
Right.
Has had a few different endorsements over the years, including some Ibanez stuff, like sort of road cores and things, but mostly that McCarty. And then runs it into the front of Mesa Boogie Lone Star, not the classic version, the 606 version, and a Blackface 65 twin reissue. So like, I saw some interview where he was discussing why he used the two. And he was saying that the twin's got all the spiky sort of top end, and then the Lone Star kind of has all the round sort of warmth, and they sort of tone, like they sort of tame each other down.
Right.
Which I found quite interesting, because the Lone Star internally is basically a Blackface 65 twin.
Right.
They're the same circuit, there's just a few component swaps. That's kind of what Boogie did. And obviously the output transformer and stuff make a massive difference.
Oh, sweet.
But it is basically Blackface 65 twin.
Understood.
Okay. The drive channel is a bit different, but
oh, cool.
Interesting.
Amazing. Well, that kind of brings us on to Joss. Before we do your one, Joss, you should definitely do some ZVEX pedals in a demo.
Yeah.
You should definitely do something like the Fat Fuzz Face, or just the Fuzz Face.
Yeah, yeah.
They're wicked. And the Super Duper, 2-in-1s, things like that.
There's some good stuff there.
I don't think we've done many ZVEX pedal demos, but they are totally wicked, especially the Fuzz Face.
Yeah,
I love that pedal, and that's completely
the Fuzz Factory.
Fuzz Factory. Oh, yes. I'm saying Fuzz Face. I mean, yeah, Fuzz Factory. Yeah.
The Fuzz Factory is a wicked. I love the fact that we get them returned every so often, and our returns guy goes, "No, it's definitely broken." It's like,
How can that not be fine?
Yeah, no, yeah.
Perfectly
that,
fine.
That's supposed to do that. It's like, no, but it's doing a different thing to what it was doing last time.
Mm.
No, but that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And then our other tech declared one of them absolutely useless. I was just like, no, that's the most useless pedal I've ever heard. Yeah, it's no good. Brilliant.
Which is
love those pedals. I think they're
exactly. I love those unusable fuzzes. Yeah. The fact that they that you can make a fuzz pedal sound like one of those bit sampler pedals is ridiculous. They are totally wicked.
Yeah. But it's all the squelchy, sputtery horribleness.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point of them. Yeah, I recently got one for my band. I got it for me, but it's now sitting on my guitar. I don't think I'll get it back. So.
No, I imagine a fuzz factory on a bass would just take all of the bass out.
Well, that's why I had to get the fat fuzz factory, which is great. And actually, kind of, a lot of those things are all right. Things like, I forgot to mention it earlier, but we were talking about that pedal that Bonamassa was playing, the Pigtronix...
Aria or Polysaturator? Aria.
Polysaturator. That's Krista Franks, who works in our bass department. In the shop, he uses a polysaturator on bass,
right?
Because it surprisingly works, and just occasionally you do get these sort of guitar drive pedals that are broad enough in the sort of spectrum of everything that they let through that that they work really well.
Or sometimes they just work really well because they take all the low end out.
Yeah,
used to play in a band with a bassist that liked using a Proco Rat.
Well, lots of bass players do use Proco Rats. I've never understood it because it doesn't make your bass sound like a bass.
No, but it does give you a third guitar without having to have a third guitar.
Yes, that is
for all those little bits where you want where you're kind of going. Oh, I've got. Both of us guitarists are playing like a tapping break and we need a lead line. Let the bassist stand in the middle of the stage.
Right. Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of that the Proco Rat could be used for.
Great, absolutely brilliant.
Sweet. Right, Joss Allen, round to you. Your third guitarist on your list, and then we'll start talking about some of the NAMM releases.
Cool. I'm going to go with Tom Searle from The Architects.
Oh, yeah.
A fellow Brightonian. I'm going to go with his rig, just because, I mean, most of the rigs that I've been saying have been pretty basic anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're never going to be sort of that pedal heavy.
No, not really. From what I know, Tom plays ESP guitars. He's been playing a different company at the moment, but he mainly plays ESP guitars. He plays a couple of Horizon models.
Right. Is he the fella that normally plays the NT2 in Dark Brown Sunburst?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So he's playing a couple of Horizons, and then he's got a couple of Eclipses as well, I think, with EMG's and Seymour Duncan's, I think, depending on what tuning he's in. But his pedal board's quite cool. He's got all three Strymon big boys on there. So he's got the Mobius, the Timeline, and the Big Sky.
Oh, really? I really want Strymon to do a pedal with all of them in.
I'm really surprised to see Architects with pedals.
But if you think about the new album, and maybe even the album before, how much atmospherical... That's a good word. It's not even a word, is it?
Atmosphere. I think the right words, the right letters were in that word.
Yeah.
We'll run with that.
Yeah,
atmospherical. I
think that possibly makes a very easy countdown round.
Yeah. Like all of the spacey sort of atmosphere that he creates underneath a rhythm guitar playing by the other guy.
Right.
So he uses, you know, they've always used a lot of reverb and delay and stuff on like lead lines, like doing the whole alternate picking thing on one note and it just gets bigger and bigger sort of thing. On there is a Maxon, like tube screamer with a noise suppressor as well. Because he uses a 6505, I think, PV6505, with a tube screamer in front of it.
I imagine doing the low gain boost with the level up.
Have either of you ever used noise suppressors in your setups?
I didn't.
No, I haven't.
I've never found a place for them. I mean, admittedly, you know, I'm not like a super high gain player, but in trying to put them in other people's boards, I've never found a place to make them not sound...
awkward.
Awkward's the right word. Yeah. Sort of really artificial.
Yeah. And noticeable and just...
Yeah.
I think it really... go on.
I was going to say, it depends what you're playing. With that sort of, like, those tight breakdowns where you want dead silence.
I think that's what he's using it for, because I think that the aggression of it isn't strong whatsoever. I think it's only for that when he stops, it's, like, dead silent.
Yeah.
So you can go, instead of it going like gut 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 gut, I think it's just like I think
I've got a microphonic preamp.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of it being like super super like duh, I think it's like, and then if he stops, then it's quiet sort of thing, sort of tapers off.
So can you use them for aggression, for like attacking the front end then? I always thought it was just to bring the note down at the end.
It won't cut into it. Trigger and won't let the sound through until you get over the threshold.
Oh, I see.
So it keeps it quiet.
Right.
And then you trip it and then let it out. But yeah, in that sort of like heavy stuff, it's quite common to run something so that all
they're on a lot of boards. I've just never been able to make them not sound a bit daft.
I used to run an ISP decimator through the effects loop on a Marshall JVM head. It's just an incredibly good noise suppressor. They don't make it anymore. They only do the rack-mounted unit now, I think.
Yeah, they did something stupid there.
Yeah. Like
For a while, they were just on everyone's boards. Something went wrong with the company or something.
Yeah, I loved mine. I had it through the effects loop. Because to be honest, the JVM is the most hummy and noisy amp on even a small amount of drive in the world. So when I was playing live, it'd just be like on a drive channel.
Yeah.
So I bought the ISP, put it through the effects loop, and that was incredible how it just cut everything out, everything away.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so that's a Tube Screamer, all the Strymon pedals, basically, a tuner, tubes, Maxon, overdrive, noise suppressor, and a Ditto looper. I don't know what he's using the Ditto looper for.
Right.
Can you store on a Ditto looper?
Yes, you can. Only one thing. But yeah, you can. I used to have one on my board for there was a point in the set where the guitarist had so much to change on his pedal board that he couldn't leave a loop running in between songs, and we didn't like it was a relative pause, so we didn't want to just leave it silent. So I just loaded up something pre-recorded, delay stuff and that, and then just triggered down, and that was the only use for the Ditto looper in the whole set.
I was going to say, I mean, it might be. Because something like that.
Maybe. It's just that Dan, the drummer, who's Tom Sells' twin brother by the looks of it, I mean, they're identical, which is crazy when you see him live. He has a laptop running with all the backing tracks and everything that is needed because he plays along to a click. So I don't know. But I just like, I don't know, being in a sort of a heavier pop punk style band, I just like the simplicity of having, you know, maybe a couple of pedals. I don't have a single one apart from a tuner, so, you know, I can't really talk, but I literally just go guitar, tuner into my amp, and I love the simplicity of that.
Especially when
nowadays you can have such high gain modern amps that I don't think you really necessarily need to have like a Tube Screamer in front, unless because 6505s sound great, or 5150s, they sound awesome, but I think they've got quite a lot of flabby low end.
I've heard a lot of people talking about using Tube Screamers to tighten them up a bit.
Exactly, and I think that's the only reason why he's using something like that, because a 6505, to me, as I said, is almost like a messer. They've got quite flabby bottom end.
Yeah.
So when you put a decent drive in front and back off all the gain, but put the level up, it really does help out with tightening the sound.
You know? Hit the front end a bit harder.
Yeah, exactly.
And then back the gain down.
Yeah. Especially when you're using, you know, passive pickups and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it's just the old kill switch engage trick. I think it was their producer that seems to have popularized.
Yeah, really, really helped that out. But so I like his rig because it's, you know, like all the other guys have said, it's just nice and simple, but does
with loads of Strymon.
Loads of Strymon. It just does exactly what you need to be doing for a super heavy band, you know.
Sweet, cool. Now we've got some new releases to talk about because Summer NAMM has just happened. Now, yes, Summer NAMM is never as big a deal as Winter NAMM, but there are still some cool things that have come out with Summer NAMM.
Really significant things that have come out at Summer NAMM.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I don't know, was the thing that you're excited to talk about, was that announced at Summer NAMM?
Yes.
Oh, it was.
It was.
I wasn't sure.
I think we should go on not mentioning it for even longer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, let's announce.
Keep talking about it.
I thought it was announced before. We knew about it before?
Well, I think everyone expected them to.
Right.
In that it sort of had to be done.
Right, I see.
I feel like we're on sort of like through the keyhole.
Yeah, this is sort a bit, of yeah. Like
trying exactly to figure like out. It's the DD500.
By Boss.
Yes.
Why don't you explain what the DD500 is?
It's a delay pedal.
Okay, and the next thing that was released.
No, it's an amazing delay pedal. Like it's actually wicked. I got a chance to play one. It does sound as good as you'd hope.
Right.
there's a lot of talk about them on the forums at the minute. It's something that seems to have gone down online really well. It's got every mode of delay you could want in it. It's, on the face of it, really simple because all the controls are laid out on the on the front surface.
It's a three-pedal delay.
Three-pedal delay, yeah. I should have cleared up some of the basics, actually. Yep, three-pedal delay, but with a big screen. So it's kind of going after that sort of Strymon mould of having like an A and a B and then like a control.
Yeah.
Obviously, looper built in, all that stuff. But it's got a few interesting little sort of switches and changes. Like, although it's simple on the face of it, with, I think, sort of five knobs to tweak all your normal delays and one big knob to change the type of delay.
Right.
If you go into the patches and go into edit, then you've basically got every parameter you could want. So if you want to be like an Uber user and tweak, you've got everything in there. If you just want a really good sounding, like amazing delay, it's straight on the face of it.
Yeah.
And it's only £260.
Yeah, which is great. So they have totally
smashed it
from where Strymon is, and are offering something very similar, which is really cool.
It's amazing.
Now,
I mean, plus it looks wicked as a delay pedal. I mean, I know
it's
that's
a new look for Boss as well.
Yeah,
isn't
really.
It? Which, and I wonder if this is how it's going to be.
I hope
now.
So.
I mean, these have got to be like the first time that Boss have used these style foot switches,
toggle foot switch things.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that and the SY300 and the ES8.
Oh yeah, of course.
It's kind of, it's like a bit of a departure.
Yeah, it is.
Sort of almost.
I expected, when I heard that it was a three-button one, I thought they'd be using the cradle switches that they've introduced.
Like on the FS7?
Like on the ME80.
I'm drawing a mind blank here. So.
They are.
Oh, the up and down. Yeah, like the FS7. Like,
oh, is it on the FS7 as well? Right.
Yeah, I sort of thought the same.
And I assumed that was the new foot switch, that they were pioneering that now.
Yeah. No, toggle foot switches, so it'll feel sort of as familiar as anything underfoot.
They've given you a secret one, haven't they, to mess around with.
To play around with.
And you're going to make us a video as soon as you played around with it. No?
Yeah.
And you had it for like a fortnight now.
Had it since the start of the week.
Right.
But it's quite an expansive pedal.
Right.
It's taking me a while to really get into the depths of it. I think the thing that is most useful, intriguing, groundbreaking,
right,
for want of better hyperbole, is that you can layer two delays at the same time. So it's three foot switches. As standard, you've got an A and a B, and if you switch between A and B, it turns the other one off.
Right.
And then the third foot switch is like a control or a tap tempo.
Uh-huh.
But if you go into settings, you can turn it so that A and B can be toggled off independently. So you can stack A and B on top of each other. And they seem to run in parallel. So you've got two parallel delays running.
Right.
And you can make some absolute monster tones. I was messing around last night with one of the patches set to like a slow gear with like 350 milliseconds. And then like a shimmer setting to like 1.4 seconds. So you've got a pitch shift coming in, it was set to go up a fifth 1.4 seconds after, but in the meantime you've got four iterations of like fading in and out.
This is incredibly complicated.
It will be in a video demo and it will be much easier to understand.
This does all sound like things that the old Digitech Time Bender could do.
You couldn't stack delay on the Time Bender, it was at a time.
Okay.
The pitch shifts and the pattern and stuff, yeah, you can do all that. It's got a pattern delay where I think there are 12 repeats, of which each one can be set to its own time or tempo. So you've got 12 delays that you can score out any pattern with.
Uh-huh.
Even from just messing around, some of the pattern delays are really useful. As the Time Bender did, and as the Strymon does, with sort of coming up with sort of rhythmic delays as opposed to just straight eighths or dotted eighths or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those pedals that is actually jaw-dropping and really, really interesting to use.
Yeah, I think it is a bit of a game changer. In a sort of a market, the delay area of effect pedals, I guess I kind of thought was sewn up. I thought the game changing had happened with Strymon, and I thought that was it. That was how everything's changed. But Boss, of all people,
have really pulled it out of the bag.
Yeah.
I think it's somewhat telling that I had to rip my interface out of my desk and plumb in some more cables to use the delay, because I was running it into the front end set in stereo.
Right.
And then I suddenly realised that I was recording stuff that I might want to use in songs, and then suddenly going, oh bugger, I've only got the delayed signal. I'm never going to be able to figure this out. So I sort of went back and I've created an effects loop.
Right.
So I've now got the dry signal recorded, so I can go back and listen to what I actually played with a note on what patch I used, so I can recreate
amazing.
these weird sounds, because otherwise they'll be lost.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is absolutely incredible. There's a lot of talk on forums with people asking questions, because it's quite intriguing that Boss have sort of released it without... because it's such a deep pedal and there's so much it can do, people have kind of referred to some of this stuff, but there isn't like the depth of information out there to satisfy everyone's curiosities.
I see.
So there's lots of people talking on forums kind of going, yeah, I think this is going to be my next delay, but I want to wait and see if it does this. And I want to see if it does this.
Right.
So before we put the video out, I'd like to try and catch up on everything that's been asked.
I see, so we can do everything.
Yeah,
so and I can sort of... This is going to be a long video.
Well, I'd like to do two. That's right. What I was saying. I'd like to do one of just tones and sort of skip through it really quickly, maybe like 2 or 3 minutes, and then do a longer one where I get to sit and waffle like this.
Sweet.
With the pedal in hand and sort of scroll through things.
Amazing. Josh, you're going to have a lot of editing to do.
I'm excited.
Yeah. So that does bring me to the point of... If anyone is wondering anything about the DD500, ask on the Facebook group.
Yeah.
And then I'll see what it can do and if it satisfies that
Yeah,
need.
There were a couple of questions about it on the group, so it'd be good
really?
If...
Missed those.
No, not specifics, just, okay. You know, just general, has anyone tried one of these sort of thing?
The thing that seems to have come up on the gear page, and I think fretboard, maybe somewhere else online, was, can it do two independent delays at the same time? Because people seem to... like. The Strymon has a way of doing sort of genuinely isolated dual delays.
Right.
And the DD500 goes beyond that, because you can have two delays from any mode on at the same time.
Right, amazing.
So you can set yourself up a nice little slapback, and then you can bang on like a massive delay over the top for your middle section. Or...
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That is wicked.
I don't want to have to give this pedal back. Like, I don't. Really don't.
Did Boss make you sign one of those loan forms?
No.
Then fine. Just keep it. Just keep it.
Oh.
Boss's loss.
But then also, I mean, we're sort of overshadowing the RV6, which also came out.
Yeah,
at the
that's
same
true.
Time.
Yeah.
And that looks like a wicked reverb pedal.
They made Josh sign one of those forms. We got one on its way down for you to try out, yeah. The RV6.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I won't be keeping it.
It's, you know, maybe I got mine off the back of a van.
Oh, you definitely did, didn't you? I put Joss's name and details down on the form, so if anything does happen to the RV6, it's actually specifically Joss's fault, not nothing to do with JAK.
Did you forge your signature?
No, I did tell him to sign it.
He put a gun to my head and said, sign it.
Yeah, oh, that's pretty much what happened.
Effective management.
But it was. But the... Summer Nam has kind of been a little bit pedal heavy, I guess, as well. Yeah. So we've had a couple of other cool things come out. DOD. Yeah. Dodd.
Back in the game.
Digitech owned Dodd. I didn't know that.
Yeah, same company, but Dodd was always kind of like the cool sort of quirky pedals, like the Grunge and the Gonculator has now reissued and that series.
Yeah.
And then sort of Digitech were the more tech end.
Yeah, so the two things that have come back out from Dodd, because there was other stuff, they did still exist. This isn't Dodd's coming
back. Yeah, they didn't completely disappear, but they weren't doing anything good. Like, they basically just did some really cheap drive pedals.
Right, I see.
Like the Screaming Blues and the Hotheads and all that stuff, and they've kind of just driven the brand down. But they've got a few interesting designers on board.
I see.
To really make some interesting stuff.
So they've reissued them.
It's the same parent company, I believe, over in the States as Randall. And obviously Randall have got Bruce Fortin and various other guys now designing really interesting heads. I think they've done a similar thing with Dodd and taken some designers from some sort of quirky boutique brands. Like the Bone Shaker is built in conjunction with someone, and the Bone Shaker looks wicked.
Yeah.
Obviously that's been announced a while ago, sort of drive pedal with parametric EQs and... Just sounds really good. But yeah, these new Dodds.
Yeah, so the two new pedals that have been announced are the Dodd Meatbox and the Dodd Gonculator. I don't know much about the Gonculator.
It's a ring modulator.
It's a ring rod. It's just a really popular one. Now, both reissues, so both things that were popular before.
Reissue slash retake.
They do certainly look very different from the originals.
I mean, because originally the first generation Meatbox, I think, had like flank and skirt and other controls on it. It was named after meat cuts.
Right.
Whereas now they've called it like sub and synth and sensible things that you can understand.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I think they might have kept with the silly naming on the calculator, but I can't remember. But yeah, they put them into the new aluminium chassis, which no one seems to have made a big thing about, but they are aluminium and lightweight. They're way lighter than a lot of other pedals, so if you're looking for stuff, like if you want a lightweight boost, like the Dodd 250 preamp is a good choice. It sounds good.
Yeah, the problem with the old ones is they used to have this sort of halfway house towards the way Boss do foot switching. So it wasn't like a complete rectangular pad.
No, it was like a little plastic pad.
Yeah, which is about the most likely thing to break in the entire world.
Although, having said that, I did have a Dodd Grunge and another Dodd pedal, which was a drive and a compressor in the same chassis.
Right.
And they were the only two pedals I had when I was a kid. And used to play in heavy bands and would jump all over them, and they never broke.
Right.
So they did seem to last.
Yeah. Yeah. But, well, apparently. So, I mean, Juan Alderete still has his on his pedal board, his original one. Now, I didn't actually know much about the Meatbox, which is terrible, really, because it was, as Luke pointed out to me, kind of pioneered and became cool because of Juan Alderete, who is one of my favourite bass players, the bass player from the Mars Volta.
He was in some, I think it was a Premier Guitar Rig Rundown.
Yeah.
And they sort of said, oh, what's that? And he was like, oh, that's the best pedal in the world.
Yeah.
And then instantly they trebled in value.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Apparently it was pretty much overnight.
They were going for like $300 towards the... And now, of course, they've been reissued. They're 120 quid now.
129, yeah.
Much more than the original ones were. But the original ones were in much cheaper chassis and everything. Juan Alderete is quoted as calling the Meatbox speaker destroying because it offers just so much sub. It was given to him, the one he uses was given to him by the System of a Down bass player when they were on tour.
Interesting.
Together, but in fact, before Dodd released this, they sent one to Juan Alderete, obviously, as he's kind of responsible for it being an important pedal, and he's tried it out, and on pedalsandeffects.com, Juan Alderete's website, he's given it a bit of a review, and he said that he thinks that it is an absolutely perfect reissue, and it offers everything that the other one did.
Perfect.
And if anything, with a little bit more accurate shaping, usable shaping than the original. So,
well, that's
that, which is great because you know I think there are a lot of times when you get reissues in them, they're watered down versions of the original.
There's always going to be someone that's going to say it's not as good.
Yeah, of course.
It's probably someone that owns one that's trying to sell it.
Yeah,
but you know, sometimes manufacturers do get stuff right, and I think it's different with electronics as well because electronics age. And the components vary and they go a bit wayward, whereas guitars age and they take on nicer tone because the wood ages and vibrates and resonates better.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, swings and roundabouts, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Now, one of the other things that's come out is Mark Bass have put out a new guitar combo that Joss, you and Luke are probably more interested in than I.
There's not a lot of info on it yet. It's still sort of a bit hazy. But yeah, basically they've taken like the DV Jazz platform, which is about...
What's that?
It's an 8 kilo 40 watt guitar amp.
Right.
Apparently, I've not used one myself, so I'm sort of speaking from sort of secondhand experience here. But
have you used one, Joss?
Used what?
DV Jazz.
I've had a go on one.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, nice.
Well, one word review. That's,
there you go.
Sweet. Apparently they take pedals really well. And they're just a really good clean platform.
Uh-huh.
So they've done something similar, which I believe has two channels, but again, information's a bit hazy.
Right.
In a really lightweight little combo, which I think...
So is it a 112 combo?
Yes.
Is that the deal?
They're 112s and they do a mini jazz, which I think is a 110, should you want something smaller.
Any idea on when they're going to hit the
October?
World? We should definitely get one, because Josh, you use the DV multi-amp anyway for everything.
Yeah.
We're definitely going to stock them.
Is it? Yeah, we should get one for demos, though.
I mean, we don't have any of the standard combos in stock.
So they don't exist yet. They're on their way.
Is it going to have?
The ones that we had when they had the DV Mark Knight, because I believe we've sold a couple.
Yeah, that was an old series of stuff.
Oh, really?
It's the solid state lightweight stuff that's.
Oh, they are solid state.
Most of the DV Mark stuff previously was all valve.
No, the solid state little jazz amps.
Oh no, they're still current. We have those in stock.
Oh right, okay.
They're not nothing, because I don't know anything about the little jazz amps. They're nothing like the multi amp. Then they're not
No. Solid state, clean platform.
Right.
Good sounding.
Sweet, and that's it. Just dead simple.
Yeah. Straight up.
But they sound amazing.
And they sort of look kind of. Possibly a bit sort of 50s, well, not 50s, a little bit sort of 60s-ish.
Oh, cool.
Like sort of white vinyl, black speaker cloth, sort of like a narrow panel, like old sort of Fender combo of format. So they're sort of apparently quite popular amongst sort of surf players and people that want to look a bit 60s.
I would have thought it would have been like a fusion-y, jazzy sort of thing.
Well, because apparently they look really 60s
right. And
they sound really clean. So they sort of found a bit of a weird niche there.
Oh, sweet.
I don't know if that market is particularly big, and it obviously wasn't what they were going for, but they seem to have found it.
Yeah, okay, awesome. Well, that kind of brings us to the end of the new releases. We've got a handful of questions, but we are running out of time, so maybe let's just do one question off of the list of questions. I'll go for the last one from my namesake. Joe says, I've just had a drink at a friend's house, and he showed me his 97 Gibson ES-135. Even though the big Gibson hollow bodies normally aren't my thing, I'm totally into that guitar. When have you found yourselves blown away by a piece of gear that you thought you were ambivalent about, or indeed, actively, previously disliked? Joss Allen. Are there any pieces of gear? I mean, I ask you, Joss, because you've owned more guitars than there are years in the world's history. But it was good. But yeah, I mean, pieces of equipment that you didn't expect to like and then have ended up liking. And I ask you because I often see you trying out new things that weren't your thing 5 minutes ago and then become very much your thing. I mean, do you remember you even bought like a, considering the type of player you are, you even had one of those, a big black Gretsch hollow body at one point.
Really?
Yeah, I still have that.
Get much
I bought that off of Jay Cross, actually. He promised me that the crack in the back of the guitar wouldn't get worse, but it got worse. But I still play it. It came with a Hiscox hard case as well for a decent price.
Cool.
I don't think it was a decent price, but I just joined the company, so I was probably naive.
Right.
I still have that guitar. It has its needs and its uses for bits and pieces, you know, depending on how I'm feeling or what I'm doing or what I'm doing. I mean, to be honest, I kind of like everything apart from, you know, massive pointy things. But
you've owned a Flying V.
Yeah, but that is a massive pointy thing. But I mean, in terms of maybe like a Jackson Warrior.
I reckon it's a matter of time before he buys a Jackson Warrior.
Next gig, you're going to be playing an Ibanez Xyphos.
Yeah. Actually, I say like a Jackson Warrior. I went up to the guy that used to work for Fender's Blue Line stuff, who looks after Jackson Chavel and all that sort of stuff. And I was like, how much would it cost to get a custom shop Warrior done? Because a guitar player I was interested in was playing one. And I, about 2 days later, I was like, don't be an idiot.
Has there ever been anything that you think you've... I mean, that purple Dean, I'm not sure we'd have ever looked at Dean's before that Jackie Vincent turned up.
Yeah, no, true. I'm kind of in, but I was into that when I first saw it though. Uh-huh. Anyway, so I knew I was going to like that one. It's really hard because most of the guitars that I've been interested in or played and stuff, I've been really into. Maybe maybe Strats. Right. There's a couple of Strats. I still don't like Strats, really.
Why all this hatred for Strats?
No, there's no hatred. It's just a dislike of the instrument because I have no use for it whatsoever.
I didn't mean that as a personal thing. I meant
I know. It's weird, isn't it? Strats. Like, Strats get a lot of flack. Some people, idiots, dislike Telecasters, but they don't hate. No one hates a Telecaster, whereas Strats have an active. I think Strats can sound, if a sound can be perceived as this, vulgar. Well, I just think that spanky sound has become associated with leather sandals or boat shoes.
And, or top knots.
I'm not sure so much top knots. More like, it's. I guess it was just the people that played the Strats. Some great people have played the Strats, but
yeah, I think someone should have told Dave Gilmour he wasn't playing the right guitar.
He was. I mean, he would actually be someone I would put in that band with Eric Clapton. That sort of that sort of people who managed to make this guitar sound really cheesy.
Oh, I'm with you on all the modern Clapton stuff.
Put some humbuckers in it, and you'll be all right.
Because all the good stuff he did was on.
Yeah.
Other guitars, basically.
Yeah.
But I don't know, Gilmour, I think.
No, I agree. Gilmour's great, but
tone to die for.
Maybe. I agree sometimes. But and I think there were some great examples of Strats being used really interestingly. I think. I always forget his name. Is it. I can't remember his name. The guy from Biffy Clyro, I think, makes single
Simon Neil.
Simon, I always say Sam Neil, and then I'm like, no, that's the guy from Jurassic Park. But it's Simon Neil. I think he makes single coil Strats sound really interesting, like the drive tones on them. And of course, obviously, Jimi Hendrix makes Strats not sound like Strats, which is why they sound so good.
One of the guys I used to work with who would often speak before thinking, I'd like to add here in a shop that wasn't GAC,
right.
Once was sort of selling something to someone and genuinely turned around and went, no one's ever made a Strat into a Marshall sound any good, don't worry about it. It's like...
There's sort been a couple.
Yeah, you're sort of cutting out a bit of rock history there, Lawrence.
Amazing.
Probably shouldn't mention names.
No. What about you, Luke, on the question? Have you ever... Has there ever been anything that you disliked and then you've played it and been like, oh, actually, this is really wicked?
Not that I've disliked, but there have been a lot of guitars that I wouldn't have considered buying and then I've accidentally bought.
Like what?
ES-339.
Oh, so a similar sort of thing. We're talking in sort of the realms of like a Gibson hollow body sort of thing.
Yeah. Like, had no need or want for a 339, and then one turned up in my old shop and played it and went, oh, I'm having this. And that was a really nice guitar.
Yeah.
That and a PRS McCarty, sort of way back in the day.
Right.
Again, had never previously wanted a McCarty.
You owned a PRS?
Yeah, for a little while. It was one of those guitars that I owned for a bit. Never really found a way to use it in any of the bands I was playing in, but it was always the guitar I went home to play.
Right.
And it was the guitar that I'd sort of sit and noodle on and all the ideas would come out of. And then I got to the point where the ideas dried up coming out of that guitar, so I sold it.
Right.
That was interesting. Again, I got it really cheap. I got it really cheap. Because someone didn't know what they were selling and it was sort of an eBay listing listed really badly.
Yeah, sweet.
And all that stuff.
I love
stuff.
Those.
So yeah, it was just kind of like I'll have that. Did well. Accidentally bought a Gibson SGX.
SGX. Oh, the X stuff. It was like Juniors and that, wasn't it?
Single pickup.
Yeah,
humbucker.
I remember this. They did Junior. It in weird colours as well, didn't
I
they?
I got the one that was all black, but I think either before or after that, they were available in like sort of pastel finishes.
Yeah, that's right.
Sort of accidentally acquired one of those, having never wanted an SG. I'm really not an SG player.
It had like an X-Files style X on the headstock, didn't it? Yeah, I remember these, yeah.
Like the year after they first did them, I think they changed it around and called it the Gibson All-American.
That's right, yeah.
And sort of did something weird.
Yeah, so
it.
They're really rare, the X's. They're actually now worth a little bit more monies on account of that because they were so unusual. Because they did a Junior as well. And SG.
Okay. It was a really nice guitar. I sort of bought it, played it for a little bit, sort of never really got on with it. But in that moment of that kind of like picking up, I was like, yeah, this is definitely the way to go. Definitely not the way to go.
No, yeah, definitely.
Although I do sort of, I never get on with SGs because the shape and the proportion just doesn't seem to fit what I'm used to.
Right.
But I do find the SG61 reissues sit quite nice because the neck's on either at a different angle or the whole heel works differently.
Oh, really?
And they just seem really comfortable. Like the original, I think they got it right and then they changed it.
Hmm. Fair enough.
It's interesting.
Yeah, I think for me, fortunately, I don't think I've ever purchased something. I think I've come damn close to purchasing things that I definitely shouldn't have. But
yeah.
Stuff that I've been impressed with that I didn't expect to be was a couple of years ago when Ibanez brought out the SR1200, which was like a mahogany-bodied, vankle-topped SR. And I hate the SR series. They're just... There are no sharp edges on them. They're all...
Oh, no, they're so good. They're child-friendly.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly exactly the problem. They don't weigh anything. They're all shapely and smooth. And I just don't like the headstocks.
My old rubbish. Guitar teacher had an old Ibanez Soundgear. Like, Soundgear became the SR series.
That's right,
He had, like, one of the old Soundgears back in the day. And we were... Like, I was maybe 12 or 13... we're doing like this little sort of school performance thing, and he'd brought it in for someone to use, and it sort of got lent up against a wall, and one of the home economics teachers came in and slammed the door, and as she slammed the door, the bass fell over and the machine had popped off. And just sort of without really thinking about it, he sort of looked round, looked really distraught, and turned around and went, "Oh, my father gave that to me on his deathbed.
Oh my god.
And the home economics teacher just stood there and burst into tears and ran out. And then Rob was just like, "I was only joking.
It's just
my rubbish bass." That's one of those little sort of stories from school that...
Oh, amazing.
Like, and then he's just like, I can't go back on that now, can I? I've got to keep this one
I love how he was saying that to children as well.
Oh, no, it was to
the other teacher.
Home ec teacher.
No, I mean, like, I can't go back on that now.
Oh,
if you said that out loud, it just looks like a kid and goes, "I definitely can't go back on that."
Yeah, I mean, that's out there.
Amazing. Yeah, the reason I like the 1200 was because they put, for the first time, they put Nordstrands in it, which are incredible bass pickups. I wish the Nordstrands would were more available in things other than Soap Bar. They have this year released like a precision bass style.
Okay.
Or maybe they'd do like a passive sale or something like that that would be usable to me. But nonetheless, it was really good. I don't like active basses because I see no point for an EQ on my instrument as well.
Because you're scared of batteries.
Yeah, I'm scared of batteries as well. But just the sound of that particular instrument was absolutely amazing. And I came very, very close to buying a guitar that looked like some sort of sexual aid. So I'm glad that I didn't. but I was very close because it did sound wicked. But yes, I think that brings us about up to time. So thanks very much for tuning in, everyone, this week. More GAK Guitar Shop podcasting next week. In the meantime, if you want to get hold of us, feel free to on the group. It's facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds group. If you want to get hold of us individually, you can get hold of me on Twitter at Joseph_900 or on email at joe.branton@gak.co.uk. Joss Allen, how can people get hold of you?
You can get hold of me on commenting on any of the YouTube videos on the YouTube channel.
Which is GAK Vision.
GAK Vision,
I don't know why it's GAK Vision, but it is what it is now.
It is,
we'll stick with it.
That's what it was set up as.
Yeah. GAK Vision.
Yeah.
Vision.
We have some insight into the future.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Our symbol should be an eye. So commenting on that and
Or joss@gak.co.uk.
Brilliant stuff. Luke Taft
and luke.taft@gak.co.uk.
yeah, it is at gak.co.uk. yeah. You got it right. That was excellently done. Well done, everyone.
Thanks
everyone.
See
you. Bye.